Bloomberg Surveillance with Michael McKee and Tom Keane. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Michelle Meyer with us with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. And as we really try to just shape up on a Monday morning, where are we? Russ Koster is joining us from BlackRock, their chief investment strategist. Russ, how miserable is your life right now? We came out of October. The world's going to end. We had this massive rebound, 17,573. Did you get any sleep over the weekend?
Well, I got probably more sleep than I did when we were down 10%. Look, you know, it's been a very quick rebound. The volatility spiked, but it didn't last. And I think the earnings season had a lot to do with it. There was a lot of concern about some of the geopolitical risks. But at the end of the day, none of those proved as relevant as people were worried about. And you had, once again, a relatively decent earnings season, which confirmed that even with relatively slow growth, companies are able to hit their numbers.
I mean, I look at this and, you know, like you say, they once again hit their numbers. What I know is a lot of Americans didn't hit this stock market. We're pushing 6 years of a bull market. Is your day-to-day framework at BlackRock that the bull market continues?
Our day-to-day framework is the bull market continues, but, you know, Tommy hit a very good point, which is that there has been a very significant divergence between Wall Street and Main Street. It's been going on for a while. A lot of Americans are not participating in this rally, and if you look at last week's non-farm payroll report, once again, the missing component was wage growth. So eventually, this is going to have to be reconciled. You cannot have an economy grow 3% over the long term if households are not experiencing more wage growth to support consumption.
Let me bring in Michelle Meyer with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. I mean, it's just fascinating. I love this idea of getting you here, Michelle, with economics front and center versus what Russ is doing with overall cross-asset strategy. I mean, it's never been more fun just try to game where we're going.
Yeah, and I think the challenge is when the markets tell something a little bit different than what the economic data do.
Well, they're out front. I mean, they're discounting the future.
Yes, and sometimes that disconnect, I think, has been challenging and frustrating for investors. For the economy, I think Russ is spot on in that the payroll report, the disappointing element in it was the lack of wage growth. Wages are stuck running around 2% on a year-over-year basis, and that matters a great deal for the consumer. To get a broad-based recovery in consumer spending, we need to see labor income accelerate, which means we need to see wage growth. And it has been quite slow. And I think as you look forward to the end of next year, we should see a higher wage environment given where we are for the unemployment rate. But it's been a gradual process and a frustrating one.
Is the market out front of Michelle Meyer's world, Russ?
I think the market is not so much out front of it, but for the time being, it's looking past it. You know, investors know that wage growth has been a problem, but, you know, there's a strange irony to this, which is the fact that in some ways, when you think about how profitable companies have been, it is the flip side of the silver lining to the sluggish recovery, because two defining characteristics of this recovery have been rates have remained low, wages have remained sluggish. Put differently, the two big input costs for most companies, the cost of capital and the cost of labor, have been very low, and that has enabled corporate margins to stay higher for longer than most people thought.
I mean, the surprise here, I got this all weekend. The surprise of what the markets have done. Once again, we're up double digit, 10%, really across the markets. Russ, is a general statement, are U.S. equities overvalued?
U.S. equities are probably stretched right now. Now, I don't think the valuation is so high that people should be worried about an imminent bear market. You've got the market trading about 18 times trailing earnings. Typically, you've not peaked with low inflation, low rates until the market's gone over 20. But clearly, if you look at the global stock market, U.S. companies are not the bargain. And generally, you see more reasonable valuations, not only in Europe, but in large parts of Asia as well.
Michelle Meyer with us, with Bank of America Merrill Lynch, economist. Russ Kosterich with us, strategist, BlackRock. Oil, Earl. There's a Beverly Hillbillies, Michelle, that was before your time. Earl, in those hills. Okay, what's the Merrill call on oil? And I bring this up with great respect for your friend, Cisco Blanche. And it's just, there's a zillion calls out there. What's your call right now?
So Francisco's baseline view is that oil prices, this drop in oil prices will prove to be somewhat temporary and that oil prices will trend back up through the end of the year. So I think his target is something right around $90 or so.
Okay. Russ Kosterich, you're at BlackRock on the buy side. You look, you know, handling mutual funds and long-term investment. You got 14 people you're listening to. How do you discern Francisco Blanche / Michelle Meyer from Phil Verliger at a lower price to, I think, Barclays at one point had a call much higher? How do you sort through all that?
It's, you know, I'll tell you, Tommy, it's all over the map, and it's a hard call for a couple of reasons. First of all, a lot of this, and we discussed this about a month ago on your show, is driven by geopolitics. So knowing whether or not we're going to see increased sanctions on Iran, what is Libyan production going to be, how disruptive will the civil war in Iraq be? I mean, these are going to be huge factors in driving oil, obviously very difficult for any of us to predict. Second of all, even in the United States, one of the key drivers is at what point do you take shale production down because the price is no longer economically viable? And honestly, I've seen numbers all over the map. So our view is that you are going to see some weakness in the near term, but we do think oil is going to start to climb back into that range of about 90 to 110 on Brent that we've seen the last couple of years.
It's incredibly boring. Both guests agree. I can't stand that.
But
then, Russ, and, you know, if full disclosure, folks, I can't cite for you the study. I remember a study 20 years ago that said oil's the toughest thing to call. I mean, that's the truth. I mean, the media's out there with gospel this, gospel that, and the answer is there's no gospel. I mean, we really don't know.
And again, I go back to the fact that a lot of what's driving oil, particularly today when you have this geopolitical unrest, is questions about military engagement that are just very difficult for most of us to handicap. That's not our training.
I mean, there it is. I mean, it's. Do you have a delta right now, Michelle, on how much of oil is geopolitics? I know Goldman Sachs years ago was at $17. I mean, is there a number you're working with?
We don't have one offhand, at least not to my understanding. Mm-hmm. But I think it is a very important factor that Francisco and his team talk a great deal about. And that was one of the things that I think surprised a lot of folks with the drop in gasoline and oil prices in this cycle, is that trying to understand how OPEC would potentially change supply as a result of geopolitical issues.
Well, and let's go on to another topic just because of time. And Russ, I know you've got a cat home named ambiguity, and ambiguity can be in the economy or in oil, but there's no ambiguity in financial repression. It's here. Do you just assume with the rate structure we have now and with Fed action that real rates after inflation adjustment for retirees will forever be the same?
I don't know if it'll be forever be the same, but Tom, but I think the premise of your question is yes. We're in an environment where even though we do think nominal rates will back up a bit in 2015, we do think we're low for long in terms of the long end of the curve, and that real interest rates, inflation-adjusted rates, will be below that long-term average for some time to come. This is being driven by long-term factors, slower nominal growth, demographics, and these are likely to be with us for some time.
I mean, there it is, Michelle. I mean, it's the mail I get that's most heartbreaking. They don't want to go into dividends. They don't want to go into the equity risk. They want to be in comfortable CDs, and it ain't there, is it?
It's very expensive to sit on cash, and it's also expensive just to sit in fixed income because of the low rate environment. And I think one of the, when you think about on the institutional side, one of the big surprises this year was that we failed to see that increase in rates. A lot of investors were heading into the beginning of the year saying the 10-year will be above 3% easily, and clearly, we're not at that environment right now with the 10-year hovering at 230.
How do you manage your portfolios, Russ, given that? I mean, is it BlackRock managing for the coupon?
I think you have to do a couple of things. I mean, one, you have to look outside of fixed income for income, whether that's dividend-paying stocks, preferred, or other asset classes. I think within fixed income, if you're looking for yields, you have to consider other parts of the market beyond those in traditional bond funds. And finally, you have to be more nimble. I think this is a period where simply the buy-and-hold approach, which was incredibly effective for 25 or 30 years, will be less effective going forward.
Russ, thank you so much. Russ Kosterich from BlackRock.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2, in San Francisco on 960 AM and 103.7 FM HD2, and SiriusXM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014 Bloomberg LP.